So I'm going to be presenting data from the Massachusetts Sharps Injury Surveillance System. And in particular, I'm going to be presenting how we've dealt with some problems when analyzing our data. So if you're not necessarily interested in data about Sharps injuries, I think some of the methodology that we're going to be presenting here can be applicable to other surveillance programs. I just want to say thank you to Angela Laramie and Tish Davis for their help over the past year in teaching me about surveillance systems and healthcare worker health and safety. So what is the Sharps Injury Surveillance System? It's a legally mandated system in Massachusetts, and it requires hospitals licensed by the Department of Public Health to incorporate the use of needles and Sharps devices with engineered Sharps injury prevention features into engineering work practice controls. It also requires that the hospitals maintain a written control plan with procedures for selecting safer devices. So the goal really is to get hospitals in Massachusetts to start using safer Sharps devices. And we require these hospitals to maintain a Sharps injury log with various variables about the injuries that occur at the hospitals. And this has to be reported to us annually, and that's the data that I'm going to be presenting today. So the methodology, so the population that we have under surveillance are all healthcare workers in Massachusetts hospitals licensed by the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. And reportable events are any bloodborne pathogen exposure that pierces the skin or the mucous membrane. So most of the time these are injuries of Sharps devices that have already been used on an individual, but it can also be if the Sharps device pierces a bloody glove, which presents the possibility for bloodborne pathogen exposure. Our reporting period starts at the beginning of the year, January 1st, and goes to December 31st. And these are the data elements we collect. I'm not going to read through them all, but the ones I'm going to refer to in particular in this presentation are occupation, device, was it a safety device, and when the injury occurred. So just some general findings that we've observed. So we've been collecting data for about 12 years now, and so we have a good amount of data to look at. So since we began collecting data in 2002, we've had between 98 and 101 licensed hospitals that have been reporting to us, and we've been fortunate enough to have complete compliance, so all these hospitals have submitted their Sharps injury log every year. And during this period, we've seen about 3,000 injuries every year, reported injuries, but this number has been declining from over 3,400 in 2002 to less than 3,000 in 2013. And most of these injuries are coming from acute care hospitals, so somewhere between 97 and 98%. We do have chronic rehabilitation and other chronic care facilities that report to us, but most of these injuries are coming from acute care hospitals, and I will be only presenting data about the acute care hospitals here. So just in general, what we've observed is a declining rate of injuries at about negative 3.3% annually beginning in 2002. And this is the rate calculated per 1,000, so Sharps injuries per 1,000 FTEs at the Massachusetts hospitals. And we've observed this declining trend for all hospital size categories. So we have large, medium, and small hospitals as defined by the number of licensed beds. And we have observed all of them to be declining at a similar trend, but the number of injuries at large hospitals has tend to be elevated compared to small and medium hospitals. One of the more interesting findings that we've had is that when we look at the rates by occupation, there's been a very sharp and significant declining trend for nurses by almost 5% annually. But during that same period, physicians have been increasing. We think, based on some anecdotal things we've been told from meeting with hospitals, is that this is more of a trend, might have more to do with reporting, so that younger physicians, as they have a bit of a different culture, I guess, where they're more likely to report than older physicians. So we think that some of this is due to reporting, but there could be other explanations, and we're interested in looking at this in more detail. But what I'm going to talk about today is the rates that we've observed for CSIP devices. Now, CSIPs are Sharps with engineered Sharps injury protection mechanisms. So these are the devices that are designed to be safe, that are designed that after they've been used, they will not cause any injuries. And the interesting thing that we've observed since we began collecting data is that we've seen more or an increasing rate, about 1% annually, of injuries from these CSIP devices, while at the same period we've seen a declining rate for non-CSIP devices, and a pretty sharply declining rate for non-CSIP devices. And this brings up a lot of questions, because if it's these devices that are supposed to be preventing injuries, shouldn't we be seeing less of them? Why should we be seeing more? So I'm going to talk about some ways that we looked at this data to kind of understand what exactly is happening. So I'm going to go into some of the methods that we used to dig a little bit deeper into this issue. So the rates that I'd just been presenting were rates calculated using regular negative binomial regression, so the type of rates that give us one trend for the entire period that we're looking at over. So to see whether there might be a little bit more happening with these trends, we use something called join point regression, which instead of looking for one trend, it sees if there's any significant differences or any changes in the trends for the different categories over time. And what we found was that for CSIP devices, they had an increasing rate up until 2005, but since 2005, they've more or less followed a straight trend. You can see they decline a little bit, but it's sort of more or less made up for in the increase from 2009 to 2013. While during the same period, there's been a sharply decreasing rate for the non-CSIP devices. So what does this mean? What we think is happening is that these numbers are a representation of the usage of CSIP devices and are not a reflection of the risk from using CSIP devices. So I just drew out this sort of schematic to give an idea about what we think is happening. So on the left you see non-CSIP hypodermic needles, so there's no protection. On the left you see CSIP hypodermic needles that have a hinged arm device that you're supposed to activate after you use the hypodermic needle so you do not get stuck by it. So before there was wide use, you can imagine if there were 10, just imagine 10 procedures being done with hypodermic needles and evenly divided between non-CSIP and CSIP devices, you might see 4 injuries from the non-CSIP devices and only 1 from the CSIP devices. But if you start having higher usage of CSIP devices, which we think is happening now, you might see only 1 injury from those non-CSIP devices just because you're using less of them, and you might see more from the CSIP devices because you're using more, but the overall number of injuries has declined from 5 to 3. So this is just what we think we're observing, so we think it has something more to do with usage rather than actual risk. Another way that we tried to look at it was by looking at the ratio of CSIP to non-CSIP injuries and comparing that to the overall rate. And so this is all the injuries at the acute care facilities that we're looking at. And on the axis to the left, you see the percent of SIs by CSIP. So in 2002, over 70% of the injuries were coming from non-CSIP devices, and about 30 were coming from CSIP devices. And then by 2013, it's almost an equal proportion, close to a little under 50% for both CSIP and non-CSIP devices of the overall injuries. But during that same period, we see this, as I showed earlier, this negative 3.3% annual percent change of the overall injuries. So as we see more injuries from CSIP, we're also seeing less injuries overall. So we think that's evidence that this isn't about risk from the CSIP devices, but rather about the increased usage. We can also look at this with by different devices individually. So this data was for all Sharps injuries in these acute care facilities. But this we can actually look at for hypodermic needles. And this is a hypodermic needle that has another type of CSIP mechanism, a sliding sheath. And for hypodermic needles, we're seeing something similar. We're seeing a pretty sharp declining rate in the rate of injuries from hypodermic needles. And we're also seeing a pretty drastic change in the number of these injuries that are coming from CSIP devices. So where previously only about a little more than 30% were from CSIP, now over 70% are coming from CSIP, and we're seeing this decline. So we can use this data or this method not just to look at overall trends being driven by the usage of CSIP or non-CSIP devices, but also for individual devices. And then the final sort of method we use to see or to get a handle on what is the usage of CSIP and non-CSIP devices is to look at when the injury is occurring. In particular, we want to look at injuries that are happening during use of the device. So when you're using a Sharp, whether it's CSIP or not is irrelevant. The CSIP technology is designed to be activated after the use of the device to prevent the injury from occurring. So the injuries that happen during use, we think reflects the overall usage more than the injuries that happen at other points. So what we've seen with hypodermic needles, again, is that the injuries during use have been becoming more and more and more from CSIP devices. So we think this is a pretty good measure of the overall usage of CSIP devices with hypodermic needles. So as I said at the beginning, if you're not interested in, if you're interested in using these methodologies for your own surveillance systems, that's my goal with this, is to suggest some methods. If you, in particular, if you're interested in looking at how to understand the effect of different controls that may be introduced. So surveillance in general is really good at counting the number of incidents, but not necessarily measuring the risk. So ideally, if we want to assess the risk of injuries from CSIP devices, we would have the overall count of these devices that were being used in the hospitals, and then we could calculate a rate based on that. But we don't have that sort of information. We only have sort of overall measures of risk, like the FTEs at the hospitals or the number of beds. So that's the best we can do right now. So this tendency limits the ability of using surveillance data to measure the effectiveness of controls. Tish Davis, the director at Occupational Surveillance, has called this the surveillance conundrum. So if you want to understand the effect of controls, if you want to see whether controls are being more effective, a lot of times you're going to be seeing increasing injuries coming from situations where those controls are happening. So what methods can be used to deal with that? So in just in general terms, I'm describing what I showed you today. Increasing injuries in situations with controls may reflect increasing use of the controls and not necessarily increasing risk from the controls. So how can you take a closer look at that? Well, as I showed, you can look at, do the rates of the injuries decline as injuries with controls increase? So that might tell you that there's overall usage of the controls, so that's why you're seeing more injuries from situations with controls, but those also may be driving down the overall rate. And you can also compare the impact to assess the effectiveness of different types of controls, so to use a sort of a proxy measure for the effectiveness. So I only showed you hypodermic needles during this presentation because they're either the first or second most common device that we see injuries from. But we've also used this methodology to look at the effect of CSIP for other devices, and we've seen in some cases the number of injuries from CSIPs increase, but the overall rate for those devices not change. So that tells us that there might be something that these devices or the safety mechanisms for these devices may not be as effective. So you can use it to also not just look at the effective controls overall, but to look at individual controls as well. And also you can consider when the injury is occurring. So if you're seeing an increasing number of injuries in situations in situations where the control is used but where it would not be effective, as we have with injuries that happen during use, that might tell you about the overall usage of the controls. And I had some trouble thinking about other type of occupational injuries where this might be relevant, but if anyone was here on Sunday when we had the occupational health meeting, you would have seen some people, my colleagues on the Young Workers Project, presenting information about working with Dunkin' Donuts to get them to introduce a new brewing machine to prevent burns. And that brewing machine in particular was designed to be to prevent injuries when the brew basket was being removed. So you can imagine as that brew basket gets introduced, or that brewing machine gets used more often, you're going to see more injuries from that machine. But if you also see an overall decrease in the number of burns happening at Dunkin' Donuts facilities, that might indicate that that is in fact being effective, that new mechanism is being effective, even though it's not. Even though you're seeing more injuries from it. So, that's my presentation. If you have any questions?
Questions? I have one.
Yeah.
When you were trying to account for the differences in injuries between the CSIPs and the non-CSIPs, mm-hmm. did you ever consider perhaps it's the perception of risk by the care staff? Because I'm thinking of an analogy mm-hmm. with patient lifting, and mm-hmm. when you have a 700-pound patient, everybody is ultra aware of the risks and they're being super careful. But when you have a 120-pound grandmother, you don't think that careful. Is risky, and you just one-person swinger.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the same thing is happening with CSIPs and non-CSIPs. Even though the risk is the same, the perception of the risk may differ in that you have an unguarded needle, so I have to be uber careful. Mm-hmm. but now I have a garden needle, so maybe I'm not going to think about it as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. And we've that's an interesting question. I don't know how exactly we could look at that with the data, but I know in some cases, especially with familiarity with the devices, so they'll become so used to activating them that they won't really pay attention to when they're activating, and they'll think it's activated, and the injury is coming from that too, and we've heard stories about that. But that's an interesting idea about the perception as there's more CSIPs used.
So, I mean, clearly Massachusetts has the best surveillance for sharps. No, really, I'm not making that thing. For truth. And is there any way to measure the effectiveness of the overall system? I don't know, is there any national data or international data? Have the rates of sharp injuries been going down in general? Is there any way you can sort of measure the overall effectiveness of this surveillance system? I mean, none of the rest of us have adopted this.
So whether it's because we're seeing declining rates, whether it's by doing the surveillance itself that's reading.
Well, I assume you also have some follow back and you have some educational. I assume component to that. But is there something? I mean, what's going on in the rest of the country and the world to say, hey, only Massachusetts is going down? The rest of the world has a similar decrease.
OSHA made everybody go to.
Well, I know.
And the first ones were crap. I mean, they really were.
So that there have been other surveillance systems. I think Angela will be better at describing than I will be.
Yeah, and that's what I had wondered about is some of the change, even because the CSIPs instrumentation was different in 2002 than it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so is it maybe less effective as the changes?
So
it's not just that total. I mean, the total number is still going down, but it's the reason you're seeing more now is maybe some of them, when they keep trying to make them better or overcome errors like not being as good at being able to guide the needles, which is what we found with them, that now they're less, you're still more likely to get an injury with it because it's changed. The designs have changed over years. Mm-hmm. How do you account for that design change?
Mm. Well, we do have information about the mechanism of the injury. I mean, the mechanism of the CSIP device that is being used. And that's the next step that we want to look at, especially with hypodermic needles, because we still see injuries that happen after use of the device with CSIPs being used. So we want to understand how that can be happening. So the questions about the mechanism are definitely.
So my question goes beyond.
Yeah, yeah. I think Angela wants to say something. Yeah.
I'm going to try and answer.
Yeah.
Healthcare providers are not necessarily changing which mechanisms they're using over time. They're converting, and they're saying, oh, I followed the letter of the law, but they're forgetting about the need to use the most currently available technology, so they're still using first generation instead of always moving to third and fourth generation.
Or the one they did talk about.
So to answer your question about what are we seeing across the country, there are no national surveillance systems. One used to exist by the CDC, but it wasn't national. It was voluntary reporting, and it was a couple of pockets geographically. And then there was the surveillance system that EpiNet had, but it too was voluntary, and it too was pockets geographically. EpiNet has taken, I think, a little bit of a hiatus, so it's going to be revived. I think, if I remember correctly, our patterns look kind of similar to what EpiNet saw. There is no worldwide data, but I was recently at a meeting and saw some surveillance done by a gentleman from Germany, and oddly enough, our data was really similar to his. It was kind of bizarre. So I couldn't tell you what else is happening in other states, because no other states do this surveillance. So I don't have a good answer for you.
Sarah?
Well, I feel the need to say something about NIOSH, even though I'm not as involved with the project as I was before. But you know, Ahmed Goma in our branch has a project to do the occupational, I can't remember what it stands for, but OHSN, the healthcare surveillance system. And so he's kind of incorporating EpiNet into that because of EpiNet not being where it was before, but maybe Angela even knows more of the latest than I do on that, since I haven't been as involved in the research.
Yeah, I mean, the OHSN is designed to be able to take data that's collected from the hospitals, and you can upload data that you collect in your own system into OHSN, but it too will be voluntary, and
yeah.
It will also not be represented.
And it's limited detail, too.
Right. It's pretty similar in terms of the, because I worked with them, the question is, it's pretty similar to what we would ask in terms of data elements. Our data elements very closely match the old NASH system and
I just wanted to follow up on Nikki's comment, because we know that a huge number of Sharpe's injuries are never reported into employee health. We think employee health gives us everything that they get, but they're not reporting. And I've always wondered, like, this is a human factors issue. Would you be more likely to report an injury if it had a Sharpe's, if it had a safety
mm-hmm.
feature that didn't work, and you'd be frustrated that your safety feature didn't work? Or if it was a Sharpe's injury that you didn't, and I mean the device had no safety feature, and there's like a human factors perception thing, and we really don't know which way. There's no research on kind of when people are likely to report or not. So
right.
We're actually hoping to do an under-reporting survey, is what we hope to do.
And I would think that you would be more likely to report if it was a non-CSIP, because you have a reason for the stick. But if you have a stick from a CSIP device, there might be the fear that you're using it improperly, and so it falls on you.
Right. I do have one question.
Mm-hmm.
When they converted to CSIPs in the state of Massachusetts, was there some predefined rate of improvement that the state was looking for? It looks like, even though you are getting some decreases, I mean, the one thing that's somewhat misleading, and this is always one of the issues you run to when you look at percentages, is you're saying it's declining at 3% per year, but that actually means it's starting to plateau out.
It definitely is.
You're not seeing much more of an improvement. And once you finally get all hospitals using CSEPs, you're going to have a reduced rate, but you're still going to have what look like a fairly substantial rate of needle sticks in these hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was my other question. Is your denominator all in hospital employees, as opposed to just those that handle
Sharpe's? Yeah, it is. But when we look at it by occupation, it's just nurses, at least, and just physicians. But you're right, the overall FTE number is all employees.
Because that would be if you're getting more employees because of other...
We've looked at that, and the proportion of from you know administrative or whatever, the clinical staff has been a similar percentage of the overall FTEs since we began collecting data.
And can I just say, we don't have any data from prior to 2000.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We can't do a pre-post.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I understand.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
But you know what we're doing, because it is this plateau, we have
right.
an advisory board.
Yes.
We are, you know, in the patient safety world, hospitals have to report their hospital infection rates, their C-section rates, you know, they have to, we are generating hospital-specific rates.
Okay.
So that's, and we've been advised to do that, even by our labor management advisory board. They want it, so that's our new initiative in the, it's actually publicly available, hospital-specific rates.
And so, can it be sort of, could that be coupled with some measure of the diseases people get from needle sticks? Would that get into sort of,
yeah.
Is that a possibility? I get that, you know, hepatitis B, HIV, whatever.
So the way our surveillance system is set up is that it's an exposure surveillance system. We don't have any personal identifiers, so I can't then go to our hepatitis C surveillance system and say, you have these people in here to see if there's been any seroconversion. What the gentleman who runs the hepatitis B surveillance system and I have been talking about for 10 years is trying to figure out how can we get enough resources to do some report about the how many healthcare workers have seroconverted to
mm-hmm.
HIV, Hep C.
And then maybe you can do that by hospital.
Yeah, and that I think would be
because usually if they're reporting the injury,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be given prophylactic treatment.
Maybe.
And so
maybe.
Maybe.
It might not be appropriate.
Right. It depends what the recommendations are. But my understanding is that the conversion rate is very, very low for most diseases.
it's very, very low for HIV.
It's more of a higher per
cap. Hepatitis B, most people have been vaccinated.
Yep.
B is the big question.
It's the gorilla in the room.
Also, I mean, if you can imagine now that there's post-exposure, there's treatment for Hep C, maybe that's affecting reporting because people want it on record that they were stuck and they later get Hep C because they want compensation because it's very costly. So, you know, there's all these things going on. It's hard to.
Any other questions?
Do they collect occupation in the Hep C surveillance system?
So, it used to be the question was, are you a healthcare worker? Yes, no. We have worked with the state lab that does all the surveillance for different infectious diseases to help improve the support of occupations. And so, at the end of the summer, when we have like 3 months worth of data collected, I'll get a report of all the different infectious diseases by occupation, and we're going to try and see if that. Now that they can get detailed nurse position, is that data worth it? So I hope that's my goal.
You know what? I've got a new EIS officer coming. He's a surveillance system evaluation.
Really?
Let's talk.
And I've been looking at the
anyone else?
Sharps.
I hope you do an ancillary and not just nursing stuff.
So our state law. Covers only licensed hospitals, so we only have authority to collect this data from licensed hospitals. And I will tell you, in Massachusetts, we license acute and non-acute care hospitals, and we run, not licensed, but we run our 4 state public health hospitals. So even our 4 states, my colleagues are not included in this data.
Yes, but I'm saying people other than nurses and doctors.
Oh, yes, like all occupations, but okay. Not outside of hospitals. So even
Janet. Well, thank you.
Thanks.